on your smartphone. Check it out. And that is a great place to get the podcasts. Looks like I made a little bit of a slip up here. We have Senator Gardner now, so I guess that was East Coast time for the 8:10, and we've got Senator Gardner. So let's double back here. Well, Bill, can you set up the recording so that we can replay it a little later in the program as well? You're on Business for Breakfast, KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM. Pleased to welcome back to the program U.S. Senator Cory Gardner from Colorado, who is our guest this morning. Senator Gardner, welcome to the program. It's good to talk with you.
Hey, good morning, Jimmy. Sorry we got our time zones mixed up there. Sorry about that.
That's not a problem. I appreciate you taking the time. It's good to talk with you, as always. So let's cut right to the chase. Yesterday, the Congressional Budget Office comes out with a score of the House health care bill, saying that the deficit would go down $119 billion over 10 years, also saying that 23 million people would be, fewer people would have health insurance. I frame it that way because it would largely be because a lot of people would choose not to purchase health insurance with the absence of the individual mandate, not necessarily because they'd be kicked off of insurance. What's your take on what we learned yesterday?
Well, I think what we learned yesterday is that we need to have a Senate bill that reflects a reality of a collapsing Affordable Care Act that is accountable in cost. We can see the cost savings that the House started to move in to that direction. Because we have a $20 trillion debt, and if we're going to maintain important safety net programs, we can't be bankrupt as a nation. And so I think this gives the Senate a good look at what the House bill did so that we can draft a policy that will actually do the job to replace the Affordable Care Act. There's a number of ideas that we're talking about that will be a solution to some of the shortcomings of the House bill. Bottom line being, though, we need to be able to reduce the cost of insurance to Americans around the country, and we do so by allowing them to buy the insurance policy that they want to buy.
And so let's kind of peruse that just a little bit here, or explore that a little bit more, Senator Gardner. When we talk about the issue of health insurance and people purchasing what the type of product that they want to buy, what exactly is the Senate sort of examining from your understanding? I know there's a working group on this, but what involvement are you having, and what's your understanding of what's being talked about?
Yeah, absolutely. I think what members of the Senate are talking about is how to adjust the tax credit to make it accountable to more of an income means-tested manner. So if you're older or you have more health problems, you'll get more assistance. If you're younger, you have higher income, that may mean the tax credit is a little bit lower, less tax credit, because you don't need the assistance of somebody who may have lower income or who may be older or a little bit less good health. And so we can put those tax credits to reflect the needs of the population. There's talk of insurance programs that would allow insurance across state lines, association health plans, to get people into group plans, to get people into employer-based plans. What we're talking about with the individual market is only about 6% of the people who are covered by health insurance. So we can restore competitiveness into the health marketplace and the individual marketplace for health insurance, and then do everything we can to try to help grow this pool of people in group insurance through employer-based coverage, because that's where most people get their insurance through anyway. And then we can help start using technology and other means to drive down the cost overall. So those are some of the ideas that we're going to continue to focus on: health savings accounts, the tax credits, how do we make sure that we states have the right flexibilities and functionalities needed, and they if they take over Medicaid, so that they can be better responsive to the needs of their state's population. Those are all parts of the Senate conversation.
But by and large, it seems like, as has been reported, the Senate's looking at their own approach as opposed to the House bill.
I think that's right. And so that's the way the legislative process works. This is back in our civics days that we learned that the House will pass the bill, the Senate will pass the bill, and then those differences will be fleshed out, and it's a way to bring about compromise.
U.S. Senator Cory Gardner is our guest. Certainly health care, a big, important topic of discussion right now, but another significant one is that President Trump on Tuesday revealed via Mick Mulvaney, his budget director, a proposed budget for 2018. This getting a lot of pushback from both Republicans and Democrats alike, as well as some praise from particularly a number of Republicans. What's your take on that budget, which would do some cuts, at least Washington-style cuts, to many of the social welfare programs that we see across the country?
Well, I think, first of all, we're going to be addressing a lot of the Medicaid social safety net programs through the healthcare bill. And so that's going to be taken care of through the legislation that we work on to get introduced and passed. When it comes to the other programs, though, I'm glad to see that we take a responsible approach to defense spending. The resources that we have now in defense are some of our branches, Air Force, Navy, are at their lowest level of resources, equipment, since World War II and World War I days, while we face ever-increasing threats in North Korea and the Middle East. So I think it is responsible to make sure that we have a competitive resourced Department of Defense that allows our men and women in uniform to not only defend and protect themselves, but to win the fight that they're tasked with, and that's to defend and protect this country. And so I do think that every president puts out a budget, Congress receives it, and then Congress writes its own bill. So there seems to be much more attention focused on this bill than the fact that even Barack Obama's budget, I think it probably only received maybe 10 or 12 votes cumulatively over the 8 years he was president.
So, in other words, this is, I don't like using the term dead on arrival in this case, because it's always just a proposal that the president is required by law.
That required by law. Barack Obama, George W. Bush, Donald Trump, they've all done it. And the press, again, isn't reporting the fact that when Barack Obama's budget was put on the floor, even almost every Democrat voted against it.
Now, when it comes to growth, this is one of the projections that's being discussed. There's a lot of talk about whether or not we can achieve and even surpass 3% growth. Opponents of the Trump administration say, no, it's just not possible. The new normal is 2% or less. The Trump administration builds in to the budget specific presumptions about a 3% growth rate. Do you think we can and will achieve 3% growth if we implement pro-growth economic policy, Senator Gardner?
Well, look, I hope not only can we get to 3% growth, I hope we can exceed that. I mean, a shame on anybody who thinks that second place is the best the United States can ever do. A shame on somebody who thinks the new normal is just a pathetic economic performance. What we need to be doing is aspiring to high GDP growth. Every percentage point of GDP growth adds hundreds of thousands of jobs and hundreds of billions of dollars in the new revenue to the federal government just through higher taxes being paid because there's more economic activity, not because taxes increase, but because there's more wealth being generated. And so let's aspire to creating economic growth. If we can lower taxes, if we can, you know, we've repealed $85 billion worth of regulations already. We've eliminated 54 million hours of paperwork throughout our economy. We continue that trajectory with pro-growth tax reform. I believe we will see GDP growth in this country. And again, instead of criticizing, oh, gee, you're too optimistic, why don't we be optimists and figure out how we can even do better?
When we talk about tax reform, the president has proposed bringing down from 7 brackets to 3. He's proposed getting rid of the alternative minimum tax, getting rid of the death tax, repatriation of profits from overseas, doing a one-time tax on that. We've got trillions of dollars overseas that he'd like to see invested back here. We're still waiting on details, and the House is working on it. What would you like to see in a tax passage package, Senator?
Yeah, that's very much in the right direction. I mean, obviously, lower taxes, consolidated bracket, simplified bracket. You shouldn't have to have a PhD in economics simply to fill out your tax form. And when you start getting into AMT and other difficult provisions like that, we're wasting. You know, we spend as much money on taxes every year, preparing them and getting our taxes sent to the IRS. We spend so much money on it that it's actually greater than the entire gross domestic product of the country of New Zealand. That's a waste of resources. If that money was spent investing in families, maybe they wanted to buy a car or improve their house, or the business wanted to hire new people or buy new equipment, if we could invest a New Zealand-sized GDP into the economy instead of into the IRS, we'd see economic growth, and that's what we need to do. So consolidate the brackets, streamline, lower the rates, flatten out the code, make it simpler. That's the right general direction.
Talk to me about revenue and this concern that we could be adding to the deficit for the country with these tax rate cuts that have been proposed.
Well, I think there's a school of thought out there that says that if you cut taxes, that means less revenue for the federal government, and therefore it means higher deficits. What they don't take into account is the economic activity that will be generated by the fact that people have more money to spend because they're not sending it to Washington, and they're instead going to buy goods with it. They're going to invest in their equipment. They're going to invest in new personnel who then turn around and pay taxes as a result. So it's a dynamic score that we ought to look at. And when you look at it through a dynamic presentation, it shows there is economic wealth. We need to pay attention, and we ought to be concerned about deficit growth and debt growth. And that's what we're doing by looking at ways to reduce wasteful spending and make sure that we have things like a balanced budget in place.
And so it's the spending that is the side of the equation that should be addressed in your mind, Senator Gardner, when it comes to deficits, not the revenue side.
Well, it is a revenue side in terms of economic growth, because through economic growth, you generate more revenue. And we do have to look at spending as well. I mean, there are $300 billion worth of wasted dollars spent every year through duplicative programs. I mean, there's like 72 different teacher quality monitoring programs at the Department of Education, duplication across the board that we ought to eliminate. And so those are things that we should focus on: reduce wasteful spending, bring reforms to government, generate economic growth. That brings more money into the federal coffers. I mean, unfortunately, Washington, D.C. is a place, as Mitch Daniels described once, as saying, don't just stand there, spend something, and that's got to stop.
Real quick, one more economic question for you, Senator Cory Gardner, our guest here on Business for Breakfast, and that is, when it comes to spending, the Trump administration a couple of days ago made this case, look, compassion when it comes to government programs should be how many people we help and push off the programs, basically giving a hand up, not a hand out. And they've been maligned for this position, saying, well, compassion should be defined differently. How do you define compassion to the extent that the government has a role in a compassionate objective?
Well, I think it was Scott Walker who said, you measure the success of an entitlement program not by how many people that you can put into the entitlement program, but by how many people you are able to get off of the entitlement program because their lot in life, their position in life has improved. It's increased. They're better off than they were. And that's what we have to focus on. And look, I think for certain people to aspire to put more people into Medicaid because they're trying to sell it as a aspirational program, they're misdirected. Instead, we have Medicaid as a safety net program to help the most vulnerable in our society who need it. And then we work to give them the tools through their own hard work, through their own hands and their own feet and their own determination, to better themselves into a job that has a group insurance. Now, there are people through no fault of their own who are going to need assistance for their entire life, and we should be there for them. But the fact is, if you're able-bodied, if we can give you the tools and training to work, you should be working, and that's what we need to focus on.
Now, just on an unrelated topic, real briefly, and then I know you've got to run, Senator Gardner, and that is North Korea. It's an issue that is very important to you. You've been paying close attention, and you've even caught the attention, speaking of attention, of Kim Jong-un himself. Seemed to be a little bit of a punching bag for him, which I think is to your credit. Talk to me about North Korea and the situation there.
Well, you know, North Korea is a tyrannical leader there, who has hundreds of thousands of his own people in the equivalent of political concentration camps, where he has tortured women, men, and children. He's killed his own family members. Poisoned the people around the globe now to uphold his power. This is a madman with nuclear weapons, and we simply have to stop in a peaceful denuclearization effort through a global partnership that puts maximum pressure on the North Korean leadership, puts pressure on China to engage North Korea in a way that they have resisted so far, so that they can stop proceeding with the nuclear weapons, give it up, and rejoin the global community. This is a frightening situation. It's the most unstable condition on the Korean Peninsula since the armistice was signed in 1953, the end of conflict, and it's got to stop.
Anything you see that we can be doing right now in order to help move that along?
Absolutely. We should ramp up our sanctions against the North Korean regime, against their labor, their human trafficking violations, ramp up pressure through the United Nations Security Council on other nations who are allowing them, aiding and abetting their proliferation efforts, who are importing slave labor from North Korea that is funding their nuclear program. That's got to stop. We need to put pressure through sanctions on Chinese financial institutions that are acting as front companies for the North Koreans. And we need to cut off avenues of cyber attacks that run through China that have been utilized against the United States. A number of issues that we ought to be doing to apply greater pressure, and that's exactly what I'm fighting for.
Senator Gardner, I know we're out of time here on the program, but it's always a pleasure to speak with you. Never enough time, but look forward to chatting again real soon.
Hey, thanks for having me, Jimmy. Take care. Thanks.
Senator Cory Gardner here on Business for Breakfast. We're going to take a quick break. KDMT, Denver's Money Talk, 1690 AM. Don't go anywhere. We're just getting started. We've got a lot more coming up.